Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe. Hello, everyone. Join us tonight for another hour of life center style conversation and discussion and learning as we nosh on the current events and trends with a spiritual perspective. You can join in the conversation of our show by calling 646-727-3206. That's 646-727-3206. Or you can go online to the chat area. We'd love to hear from you. So let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight.
Hi, this is Robin with Flowers for You and also Transformation Cafe. We thank you for joining us tonight, and if you're going on demand, we thank you for checking us out. And we have Mr. Jamie here at the table. Hey, Mr. Jamie, how are you?
I'm most excellent. Mr. Jamie calling from Great Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Washington.
That's wonderful. And how's the weather?
It's raining.
It's raining. Oh, my goodness. So that's exciting. Well, we're supposed to be getting rain tomorrow, so we're excited about that.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Very excited about that. So how have you been? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear
okay.
me?
Okay. How have you been?
Good. How have you been?
I have been very good and excited. So I was wanting to talk tonight. I think Miss Marvine, one of our regular diners, might be popping on the show. She may be out getting valeted with the waiting here for the cafe. So we thank her for hopefully she's going to be coming on. But we'll just see what happens with that. And one thing I thought would be interesting to talk about was I came across, I've been starting to watch a bunch of YouTubes. And there is one called Good Mythical Morning, and it's by Red and Link. Are you familiar with them?
No, I'm not.
No, you're not. Okay. They have a really fun 15-minute show that they do pretty much Monday through Friday. And every day they have different kinds of topics and things like that, which I find are interesting and hopefully things that we can kind of roll over and put out here on the table so we can be talking about it once in a while. And one thing they talked about this week was there is an island of plastic that is out in the North Pacific Ocean right above Hawaii. And I'm not sure exactly how close it is to Hawaii now, but because of all the currents that are between Japan and Russia, Canada, and also the United States, it literally creates this circular motion where all these different trash collectibles have been over the century. You know, they originally found out about it in the 1980s. And at that time, it was a little smaller than the size of Texas. So it's interesting that nobody's talking about it. And you know, here we're coming up at the anniversary of the BP, you know, oil spill. And I think it's just so interesting that you know, everybody, since I found out about it a couple of days ago, nobody's ever heard of it. And here it's this global situation that's going on, and some of the different aspects of things they're going to do it. There's actually some YouTubes, if you go to the Plastic Island on YouTube, one was being was really good. It was actually a high school project where some kids got together to try to problem solve what they think they could go ahead and do with the problem. And they're looking at Norway and Germany and all these other countries that pretty much use all of their garbage. They do a recycling for energy. And so they're talking about the possibility of getting some other countries involved to where, because it's really in international waters, and having it to where it could be something on a global level that basically can enhance the planet once they pretty much, you know, get to a place where they could utilize that and have it to where it's actually a betterment for really everybody, because the animals and the water itself is quite polluted. And it's basically with all the currents and stuff that are happening all over the planet. So it's really kind of shocking.
I have heard of this plastic island or mass the size of Texas. And I've heard it debated that there is something there and it has been known for quite a while. And I've also heard that it's a myth. Now, again, that's just what I've heard. I haven't seen an actual photo of it or YouTube of it, or I have heard that it does exist, and it seems very plausible as well.
Very plausible. If you look at there's two or three different YouTubes that do a pretty good job of showing the different currents from, you know, that whole area of the Northern Pacific area and how that could happen very easily. So I think it's really interesting that nobody's really talked about it. I've never seen any documentaries on it or anything. And how that whole thing came about was basically just talking about water. And there's a movie called Tapped, T-A-P-P-E-D. And if you go to tappedthemovie.com, it's all about the marketing of water and how it's just like the largest scam pretty much that's ever been, on how people basically think they're getting this bottled water that's actually safer than anything we can get from the tap, and that's just not really true.
Are you talking about just any type of bottled water, or that it has to come from a certain source, or it's a special type of water, or just...
I would say probably, you know, and I'm kind of guessing I haven't done, like, you know, hours and hours of research on this, but I mean, for the past couple of days, I've been looking at different resources. Most of it's online, so, you know, on whatever level on having people get that out there. And of course, everybody's got their tilt that they want to have on, you know, their perspective. But it seems that more than 50% is basically just tapped water that they put into bottles and basically make it available and say that it's filtered. You know, and it's really nothing different than you could just basically have as you just open your water and let it run. Because they say if you wait 20 seconds from your water coming through the tap, once it's kind of had a chance to flush through your pipes in your house, it's basically going to be, you know, just as safe as you get something you can get out of a bottle.
Right.
So it's really interesting.
Above water, that it's kind of amazing. And a lot of it just comes from the local sources, I guess.
So, you know, and then, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, one of my things of, you know, us getting together here at the cafe is coming from that light perspective, wanting to come from the positive perspective. But yet to hear something like that, it's really just such a wake-up call when we hear about all these talks about how the Earth is changing and there's just such a level of pollution on the planet. And yet when you look at things like that, and I know it goes on in a couple of the other YouTubes to talk about the level of plastics that keep breaking themselves down in the ocean and how hard it is for, you know, marine life to be able to survive anymore. They think they're eating, but they're not. They're just filling up with plastic. And so the amount of, marine life being able to survive is just really shocking.
But can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've got you on speaker, and I'm trying to figure out how to get my phone to change.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where, like, okay, go down, because I need to have my speaker off. So, you know, hopefully I can figure out what that looks like.
I know that the plastic itself, it breaks down to almost microscopic smaller particles, and it is ingested, so it's part of the food chain.
Mm-hmm,
I know also
mm-hmm.
I read something about in the Gulf where the BP thing happened, that, you know, they declared it clean. But they were talking about how some of the sea life has never come back from that, and others have these weird lesions, you know, stuff they catch has these weird lesions and mutated fish and marine life, and a lot of it is having to do with oil that was on the floor, the very deep oil that settled. And, you know, that's going to be there forever. It's kind of a sad thing.
Yeah, and you just, you know, when people just, you know, to really realize the impact of man on the earth and the amount of just the unconsciousness of what's really kind of happened on such a level. So it's, like I said, it was just a real wake-up call for me, you know, this last couple of days looking at stuff, and it's almost like, you know, I have to literally close my mouth because I'm like, my mouth's like, oh, you know, dropping the jaw here on some of this stuff.
As far as that plastic mass, all I can see it is there's probably more than one, There's probably one in the Pacific, and it's probably even larger, and I don't think it's going to get any smaller, if you know what I mean. I mean,
the
oceans circulate and the stuff that's in the water.
Yeah.
It's a natural thing that it would kind of bond like that. It's,
I know on the Go Green channel, and I'm trying to think of what other channel, there's been a couple different channels that have talked about inventors who have figured out how to take all the garbage and basically recycle it into energy sources. So to the point where less than 5% of all the garbage would be something that couldn't be recycled. You know, so I think of something like that and then have it to where, you know, of course it would be costly to, you know, basically have these, you know, basically recycling ships that would come out there and basically,
think about it. It's, pretty much recycled.
Yeah. But they were also one of the points that this student's video had talked about was the fact that when it comes to the levels of just transporting a lot of these garbage is basically getting shipped to other places, you know, further and further away from locations that they have, that it makes it to where really cost-wise in looking at the benefits for things like that. So it's something to really take a look at and have it to where we can make some different choices and recognize that, you know, here we are a global community now. So it makes a lot more sense for us to be in this place where we can absolutely make some choices where, you know, it's a global level, it's a world level, that we all come together and have that on such a level of, for projects, for stuff to just better the earth. So, you know, there's solutions out there. But a part of it is, you know, I'm sure big business is looking at that in the sense of having things for expenses and things like that. So it was kind of ironic because they were talking about the oil spill, and here we're on the second anniversary, and I was watching it. And do you know who Carlos Mencius is, the comedian?
Oh, of course, yeah. He's very popular.
Did you see his show he had last I think it was in the beginning of December, Comedy Central, they had one of his specials. Did you watch that?
Maybe not.
Okay. Because he was talking about the oil spill, and he had his 4-year-old with him. And it was really funny because they were watching this news report, and they were going around the whole coastline of the Gulf, and they were all scratching their heads going, "We can't find any of the oil," right? They couldn't find any samples of oil and things like that. And, you know, his 4-year-old son, he says, "There's a whole lot of water in the ocean," you know.
Right.
The oil was able to disperse itself, you know, without man really getting involved, you know. And, of course, they had all those chemicals and everything else that they were doing, trying to minimize the slick that was involved.
In some cases, some of those chemicals were worse than the oil, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It was supposed to be helping, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it was just trying to... there was something else that came out today was somebody had gotten fired from BP, and they were basically making some claims about just the levels of corruption and stuff, and try to hide a lot of stuff that was happening at that time. So
well, you know,
really
they always you can't. I mean, I don't want to say make a broad generalization, but a lot of times you can't really trust the corporation.
Oh well, and even the media on whatever level, how much is the media getting controlled, and what we're getting told. You know how that goes. Oh, yeah. So, you know, you got that whole thing going on there. Yeah. Miss Gloria just decided to just get up to the table. Hey, Miss Gloria, good afternoon, good evening. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys tonight?
We are great. We were talking about the oil, some of the oil situations that are going on. We're on the second anniversary of BP. And along with that was the island in the Pacific that's pretty much out of plastic. It's a plastic island out there. So actually, I talked to Gloria a little earlier this afternoon about where the topic was going to be tonight. So she's a little bit up to speed. So that's a good thing.
Well, you know, it's a different kind of oil product, that's all.
Yes, it is a different kind of oil product. You know, and that's kind of ironic if you think about it. You know, here we have the regular oil spill, And, of course, nature knows what to do with that on a certain level. But, you know, we've got this thing, you know, this large mass in the middle. It's like Jamie was saying that on some levels he heard that it was a hoax.
Huh.
That there actually wasn't an island out there. So I was wondering, if you go on Google Maps and you go to the Pacific, I wonder if you actually could go to that area and be able to see something. I wondered if they would even have that on a satellite level where you could see it.
Well, one more place for you to do some research.
Well, you know, depending on what satellites are involved, you know, they may not necessarily have that restricted. You wouldn't necessarily be able to have access. You know how that goes.
Exactly.
Depending on who you are and what you know. Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
And it could be that it's a reality and they're just perpetuating it as a myth because it's a top secret intelligence facility.
And they just covered it with plastic on top so nobody really knows that there's this ocean, you know, world underneath where they have all these different things kind of going on. Because, I mean, I can remember from the mid-60s, they always talked about how, you know, we have so many people on the planet then, and there was so much ocean that people are going to start living in the ocean.
Well, yeah,
that?
And the under, well, of course, and I've got some diagrams from Popular Science where they had illustrations about the underwater housing. I thought it was magnificent.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to live under the water, though.
You know, they even
well,
had a
if
TV
you think
show
about it,
during
though,
the 60s about a family living underwater.
Well, and if you think about it, with the plastic there, that could very well be a channel for underwater lighting for direct sunlight.
Yeah, that's true. But, like, Jamie and I were talking about, so what's happened with all this water, all the decomposing that's going on, there's such a fragmented level of plastics that are in the ocean now, that wildlife and everything else is, they're thinking it's krill, they're eating it, and then they're not being able to survive because there's just such a level of pollution.
Sucking the nutrition right out of even the food for
them. Oh,
this.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't think I want to eat fish anymore.
It's
you know, you're eating plastic.
Our tomatoes are losing, our tomatoes
yeah,
and our plants
exactly.
are losing nutritional value. Now our fish are also suffering.
Exactly, exactly. So... I wanted the show to be kind of like half trash and half treasures. So
let's have an upbeat now.
Okay, let's have the upbeat thing. So there's this guy. His name is Richie Sowa, and it's S-O-W-A. He was a carpenter in America, and he decided that he wanted to get out of the rat race. So he moved down to Mexico. He actually moved down to Cancun, and he decided he was a carpenter, so what he did was he started collecting bottles in Cancun and putting them in fishnets and made them into these bundles, and then he put pallets under, you know, pallets on top of them, and he created his own island. So he lives on this island that's a little bit bigger than a tennis court. Can you believe that? I think that's really – you can actually go on YouTube, and it's called Plastic Island. What is it called? I'm trying to – yeah. Island, and it was called the Plastic Bottle Island.
Plastic Bottle Island.
Plastic Bottle Island. If you go to YouTube, you can watch it, and it's got, like, there's a couple different British reporters that basically talk to this guy. But what's interesting is like, he did it for 2.5 years, and he's got sand, and he's got trees, and he's got everything growing on this island. It isn't just like a big flat spot. I mean, it's got greens, you know. He literally can live off of his island now because he's got citrus and all these different things that are growing on his island. He's self-sufficient. He's got, like, cats. He's got, like, 3 cats that live with him now on the island. And you know, and he goes to the main island and come back, and you know, from Cancun. So
my question is, it more like a boat? Does he float with the tide? And
no,
you know,
well, he can move around because he said there's been 3 hurricanes and his island is held up better than the villages that were more land, you know, on land.
Right.
Because he was able to move, it actually worked better than having people, you know, having it to where it was solid land. It was interesting. It's very, very interesting. But what's interesting is Mexico has found out about him, and you know he's got this solid level of island and things like that. So now they want to claim him as part of Mexico and make it into a tourist attraction.
Well, cash station.
So he can charge. He can charge for tours, and they're going to make a big deal about, oh yes, we have people who make islands here in Cancun. You know, when they come check out his island, kind of thing.
Well, you know, depending upon how far off of the land he is, he's not in international waters.
No, he's not in international waters because, I mean, from the way they show it and the way he goes back and forth on the land, because all of the sand and everything he literally got from the other island, from the shoreline.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost like he's in a wide lagoon or something, the way that it looks when you see pictures and stuff of this stuff. And there's like three different videos, and the first one you show, he's kind of like got a shack, and by the time you show the last one, he's got this like two-story house that he's put it together over there. So he decided to go up, you know, because he couldn't go out. Well, he wanted to majorly add on to his island. But, you know, that's really kind of incredible. I mean, he totally just, like, you know, with pallets and, you know, water bottles and fish nets, you're able to create an island. That's pretty impressive.
Quite ingenious.
Yeah, very ingenious. So, like I said, it's when one person's trash is another person's treasure. It just really, because, you know, you could tell he really works in harmony with the land, the way that he's put the... He's got the sand, and then he's got his dirt and everything that he has on there, and then he's got his trees and everything else that he's got growing on there. And it literally looks like an island. But what's really cool is they had gone underneath it, and they were showing the way that the structure was, and it's just all these fishnets of just these large, you know, collections of bottles, plastic bottles that are basically under there floating.
Well, have you ever heard of the island or known about the island that they have in Long Beach that it looks like an island, but I don't think it's oil. I think it's like water processing.
It's a plant, camouflage.
Yeah. Well, they've got oil rigs out there too, though, don't they?
Right.
Because they decided that it was bad for tourism to have oil rigs sitting out there that weren't looking nice. So they made them look like, they made them look like islands out there when they're actually just, a couple of them are processing plants, but a couple of them are oil rigs that are out there. Yeah, so
yeah,
it's just very, very interesting.
I got to go on a tour of the one that's closest to Long Beach, and it's amazing because you get in there and it's so much concrete. It doesn't look anything like that from the shoreline.
It just looks like this goes to the tropical island, man, you know, and then you get there and it's like cement island, okay. But boy, can you imagine how deep that must go?
Yeah.
Exactly. They made it out of, I mean, I always get amazed by stuff like that when you think, it's just like even oil rigs and things like that, just the level of, you know, engineering to do something like that and have it, you know, coming out of the water like that and secure to the ocean floor and all that kinds of stuff. It's really,
makes me very curious about that man's island when you think about, you know, the base. Is, you know, how did it get foundationed and what anchors it? And, yes, it may be able to move around, but if it's not being affected by the currents, then what's holding it in place?
Right, right. Well, you know, he doesn't really get into that on the YouTube. But you know what? I bet he's got anchors. I mean, why wouldn't he? That would make sense that he would. I mean, you know, like, I hadn't really thought about it before until you brought it up. So thank you, Gloria.
It'd be so cool if he had a motor or a couple of motors on that thing so he could just move it from one.
Yeah, it really would be. It would be pretty, you know. He could, like, invite a bunch of friends over, and then everybody's got a paddle, and it's like, okay, I want to move the island over there.
Like, I want a water ski.
Or hook it up to a tugboat.
He could have
a tugboat. I'm sure you could move that. Shoot, you could move a cruise ship. You know, you could move with a tugboat. You could move your island. I would think so.
He could go on vacation and, you know, visit Alaska.
But he, you know, like Wally said, you know, it's gone through three hurricanes and it held up. You know, I think part of it's because the way he had built it up with the trees and all that kinds of stuff, there was more, you know, structure to the top of it, the way he put it together. So he's a really good carpenter if he can, like, you know, put that all together and then just start, you know, stuff. So this just shows the level of ingenuity. When there's a will, there's a way, man, you know?
Of course, he'll figure a way to build something if it's invented, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I could just see it now. It would be like franchising a yurt process, you know? You want a new island? Sure, I'll build one for you.
Well, you know, they've got those earth houses that are basically made out of tires and old, you know, and glass bottles and dirt, basically. You know, and, and they're actually more energy efficient because of the way that they're built to go along with the you know, with the sun's tracking and all that kinds of stuff that they do. That it's all really based on solar energy and then having everything more underground than on, you know, than just on the surface. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes with that. You know, we've really gotten away from that, having, you know, major manufacturing when it comes to building homes and stuff like that. We went back to that. I mean, look in the prairie days when they would do something like that. They would definitely, they dig it all out and they, you know, take their wagon or whatever when they were, you know, shifting gears and stuff, use it as part of like the side of the wall or something, and then they'd be digging out part of it to where you basically were living from just like, almost like a cave or whatever, the way they created it. There's that one, it's a subterranean design that they had that was pretty much all like at least one level down, that's in Fresno. I can't remember the name of that garden either. It's this garden facility where this guy, that guy did for like 20 years. He basically dug a house that was basically, you know, one story down, you know, underground kind of thing. But there was a lot of openings and stuff the way that he designed it. And it's all basically just, you know, just right there. We dug it out of the dirt. It feels very subterranean because there's a lot of trees and things like that that he had growing from the next level down. So the trees were basically the roofing and everything for structure and stuff like that. I mean, there's a few places where they had to create roofs and stuff, but most of it was just like using, you know, trees and bushes and things like that to basically, you know, have it protected from the weather and all that stuff. So it's a very, very different place. I can remember going there. We went there years ago, and it was like 100 and, you know, maybe 102, 103 when we went to go visit it. But underneath, it was in the 80s.
Probably like an oasis.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was just really, really cool the way that they had it done. So it just shows that level of getting, you know, grounded, get back to, you know, being with the earth instead of having just living on top of it. And how you can really utilize that and be in balance with the earth so much better.
See, I miss Midwestern basements. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, I heard that because of all this different stuff with the islands and stuff like that, Santa Barbara, they was just like when Japan got hit, Santa Barbara got hit too. There was some kind of bunker or something they had in Santa Barbara. And so a lot of the houses back at that time period, they all had basements. So everybody's got these, you know, underground levels and stuff that now they can use for root cellars and food storage and stuff like that they have.
Well,
so,
I don't know if it's true out here, but I know that up in Orange County in Irvine, the ground was mainly sand, compacted sand, that had a water, it was flushed with water, so it helped to diminish any of the earthquakes. It was more of a rolling effect versus a jolt, and so it could be that the lack of basements in this area could have to do with, you know, water content too.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. So, so it's just very, very interesting of just the wake-up calls and things that are going on with that and getting connected to the earth, respecting what's really happening with Mother Nature. And, you know, it's getting in tune with things instead of having things so much processed and things like that. So, you know, because they were saying what the solution with this plastic island was, you know, you just make a real commitment that you're not going to buy plastics, and, you know, anymore, you know. And that's really hard to do. I mean, between bags and the packaging, you know, the way everything is packaged nowadays, it's quite the challenge. But if you look at people over in Europe, the way that they handle stuff, it's not uncommon for most homes to have three or four different containers and stuff, and it's just part of what they do with their, you know, when they have any kind of things that they need to be recycling. You know, it's very strong and very promoted over there. So it's definitely just the way of life that they do that, and they make it just a part of their economics, so it makes sense to have it where it serves the community and be able to give back to the earth and not have it where there's so much waste. So it's very, very cool. So, well, we're down to our last 30 seconds, so thank you both for coming in and hanging out, and we thank anybody who's been checking us out on demand. And if you guys have any questions, we've got all the stuff with our announcements, and we will see you next time here at the cafe. Thanks for checking in.
This has been another wonderful evening filled with lively and unusual dinner conversation and you. We are so glad you decided to join us. You make it special, and we are always happy to hear from you at Transformation Cafe. You can find out more about the people on our shows by clicking on our website, transformation-cafe.com, and checking out where all our other previous shows are available on demand, or here at Blog Talk Radio Transformation Cafe. If you are interested in appearing as a guest chef, you can email us at show@transformation-cafe.com. Thanks again, travel well, and we will see you next time here at Transformation Cafe. Good night.